It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. So it is Farmer Friday. We would love to hear from you. Our phone lines will be open all throughout the show. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute, where we take your questions. And I know we have gotten so many of those lately. A lot of soil test questions. If you've been listening to the show the last couple of weeks, you've heard us talking about soils quite a bit. Well, obviously, I mean, it's top of mind. Most people are soil testing right now and wondering, what should I do with my fertility program? And I know we've got some of those to get to today as well. Let's go to it right now, the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, this is from an agronomist down in Nebraska. He said, I've got a customer of mine who has a field of alfalfa that really needs to be terminated. It's on sandy ground, though, and we want to see as much fall growth out there as possible. Otherwise, that sandy soil will blow all winter, so he's not going to kill off the alfalfa now. The stand is really thin. He's got some leftover wheat seed that didn't get drilled this fall. He's wondering, could he put that wheat out into the alfalfa field to fill in the gaps and suppress some weeds in the spring? If so, would it be smart to take the first cutting off and then terminate the alfalfa after that? He wants to plant some Sudan grass. I'm unsure of how well that wheat would grow into the alfalfa field, though.
Okay. Undoubtedly, if you've been a farmer your entire life, you've heard about the allelopathic effect that alfalfa has to other alfalfa plants. So in other words, the root system will put out a chemical or chemicals into the soil to prevent new alfalfa seeds from germinating. And that is true. That's allelopathy. But what the deal is it's not going to necessarily stop your alfalfa or your wheat from growing in there. So could you go seed some wheat? Yes. I mean, obviously, we always talk about sunlight needing to get down there. So if you've got a crop canopy, but you just said it was a thin stand, so yeah, that certainly might work. Now, let's talk about the downside to this. Number one, you're going to tear up a bunch of alfalfa plants. Number two, you are now going to suck more moisture out in the spring. I've had a lot of guys over the years that I've worked with take that first cutting, whether it's we're talking wheat, alfalfa, whatever that there is out there, but take that first cutting and then try to seed another crop, and a lot of times it's been disaster. Now, if you have irrigation or if you believe that you're going to have above average spring rainfall, then it's probably not too bad. But I'm concerned. I was just looking at this with someone this morning. Where we farm, we're actually in the severe drought area, and I don't know what it looks like for your area, but all I can tell you is as soon as I start thinking about Nebraska, and I think this was south central Nebraska, if it's not irrigated, I'm very concerned trying to take a spring cutting and then actually having something decent that I can grow after that. But if the question is just, can I go seed that wheat now? Sure you can.
Okay, thanks for the question. We appreciate that. This one comes from Jimmy. He said, you were talking about ways of reducing compaction. I thought that cover crops could be used in that purpose. You didn't spend much time talking on them. What do you think about cover crops for compaction reduction?
Yes, cover crops can certainly help. It really depends on what the situation is and how severe that this compaction is. So if, let's say, it's some wheel tracks out there, I mean, that's tough, because if you've got stuff that's depressed, let's say 4 inches or 6 inches in a few areas where those tires have run, I mean, you're not going to fix that very well with cover crops. It's never going to level out the soil or anything like that. If you have a general amount of compaction that's, let's call it 4 to 6 inches deep, if you had, let's say, radishes, turnips, possibly even an alfalfa stand, then yes, you will bust up that compaction to some degree. So the other thing you can do is build your overall soil organic matter, which allows your soil to hold more water and nutrients, and that's a good thing. So I mean, it's okay. I'm not saying cover crops is my first choice at reducing compaction, but can it help? Absolutely. And it really depends on which cover crop you select.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that. This one comes from Josh in Nebraska. He said, we've got some winter wheat down here where we have drilled the wheat in, but we plugged every third row to allow for us to come in the spring and plant 30-inch row soybeans in the empty spaces.
Okay.
Our intention is to harvest the wheat in July and then take the beans out in the fall. The wheat is about 3 inches tall right now. We burned down with 2 ounces of Sharpen just after planting this fall.
Okay.
Wondering what the weed control plan should be for the spring. Can we use Zidua in the spring? Could we use the Zidua even now with 3-inch tall wheat? Otherwise, what other herbicides, so forth? And then also, what bean trait platform would you recommend in this situation? Well, first of all, if you've got wheat out there, you're not spraying Liberty, you're not spraying Roundup. So that takes some things out of the equation.
Well, I mean, if you're trying to control weeds post-emerge where you have wheat and soybeans, I don't think there's anything that you can use.
Well,
that I
if
can
you
think
if
of.
You went Enlist, you'd have the option of using some 2,4-D. Now, I don't know that it's labeled on a wheat crop, but and it can be a little hard. You know, the Enlist One. I don't know if Enlist One that particular product.
That's a thought at least. I don't know if Enlist One is labeled over the top of wheat, but I mean, it at least wouldn't kill the wheat. I gotta say, I'm not a big fan of this. I mean. You're trying to raise two crops at the same time, and generally speaking, that doesn't work out super well. It might turn out okay for you. And, you know, if you're only doing a few acres, I guess we try all kinds of things too. But in terms of weed control, I don't have any good answers for you. The Zidua, can you do the Zidua? Yes, you can. I off the top of my head, I don't remember how late you can go on the wheat label, but it's not very long. So could you do some now? I believe so. I think you're still good there.
I double checked the label, but it sounds like you'd probably have to get that Zidua out there now if you're going to do it.
Yes, yeah, you wouldn't be able to do it in the spring. That would end up being too late, I'm sure, and pass the label restriction. I'll look that up during our break here, and maybe we'll talk more about this in a little bit.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the end zone from Farm Shop MFG.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to Western Kansas. We got John on with us right now. John, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad. A little bit windy today.
Yeah, we've had a little less wind for a while, and now here comes the wind again. So is harvest all wrapped up for you guys?
Yeah, we finished up almost 3 weeks ago now. So we were able to just roll right into it after wheat drilling and just kept on going. So we got it all knocked out, thankfully.
So what's the wheat looking like right now? Have you got some pretty good growth on it going into the winter?
Yeah, everything. We were fortunate. We caught a rain, inch and a half, 2 inches there first week or 2 weeks in September. So it really set us up well for having a good seed bed to drill into. We've been pretty warm. It's got some decent growth on it. At this point, it could probably use another little drink. We've basically been dry since then, though. So, but I think we're looking pretty good going into winter.
What are you thinking for this next crop when you look at spring crops in 2021? What's your intention? Are you switching acres around this year?
No, not a whole lot. We have kind of over the last few years here been switching over. We did have more acres of wheat, and then we would have a few acres of fall crops for feed and silage and that for our cattle. But we have switched our rotation over to where we're basically a third, a third, and a third. Wheat, fallow, and then fall crop. Or, well, I guess fall crop following the wheat, and then fallow before wheat. And we're starting to do some experimenting with some cover crops and maybe trying to add a third crop in there also. So a lot of different stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah, that's fun. What do you think about sorghum? Is that something out for your area with the way the prices are going right now and the demand?
Yeah, that's where we're at out here. Sorghum acres vastly outnumber the corn acres. And that's all that we plant, at least up to this point. And that's mostly because we've always fed sorghum in our feed yard. We've got a grower yard, so it works real well for the operation that we're doing to feed the sorghum. So it actually worked out really well this year with the way the price and the basis and everything's gone. Sorghum currently is about $1.25 basis premium to corn. So we actually ended up selling all of our sorghum and buying corn back to feed and made a pretty decent margin on it.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
So yeah, and it's kind of hard to tell. I know a lot of guys like the yield potential better on the corn. There is a little more upside to it, but we've also been pretty wet the last couple of years. If we get into a drought here, I don't know if guys are really thinking of switching some acres back to sorghum or not.
So. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out this year. There's no doubt about that. So talk to me about your cattle a little bit. You've been above normal temperatures now. It sounds like we got some cooler weather coming. How do you prepare cattle in that situation?
Well, on the feed yard side, it's usually not too bad. We actually, our kind of niche market that we're doing around here, we like to buy kind of smaller calves, the five weights and that. A lot of ballers, you know, stuff that they've just weaned. We've got a few ranch deals that we work with where we go out to the ranch, pick them up straight off their cows and bring them here. They never run through a sale barn or get commingled. And cooler weather is usually better for that. Tends to keep them coming to the bunk a little better and eating more. And we just have less health problems. When you get the wild swings where we're 80 degrees and then we'll be 50 degrees or the lows will be 30, and it's a lot harder on cattle when you're trying to wean them. But we've got a pretty robust vaccination program, and we worked with a lot of those ranches to do preconditioning on their calves, so we pay them a premium for that because it really helps on our end with not having near as many health issues.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I know growing up on a cow-calf and farrow-to-finish operation, that made all the difference in the world. If you start with healthy animals and just keep them ahead of the game like that, you can certainly tolerate some of the weather that we know is going to be coming. We're talking with John out in western Kansas. John, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Yeah, not a problem. Have a good day.
Yep, you too. I got another John with us. He's up in Quebec, Canada. John, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I just pulled off the road. Anyway, we're having a heat spell up here. We're about 70 degrees the last few days. It's going to keep going for another few days, so it's wonderful.
Yeah, we'll take that this time of year. I'd be okay if that just lasted through January, February. That'd be cool.
I guess we all wish that.
All right. So talk to us about crops up there. Has anybody got stuff still in the field, or is everybody about done?
The only guys that are, there's two guys that are haven't got done, but they bought new dryers this year, and they were late coming, and they're just installed now, and they're just well started. But yeah, most people are finished. And so, it's been a very dry, by and large, dry harvest. So I've never seen so much dust in corn in my life. It's we got an early frost around the 20th of September. My corn was only about half milk line, but there was we had three out of 4 days we had a frost, but there must have been enough in the stalks to finish the corn, because the corn is 55, 56, 57 pounds. So
wow.
Something like that. Yeah, got a little bit lucky, I think.
Yeah, it's better to be lucky sometimes. There's no doubt about that. So you mentioned how dry it was at harvest time. Did you have issues with fires or anything like that?
No, we didn't. We were kind of, I think everybody has taken care of keeping the combines clean and fairly clean and as much as they can. Yeah, but I've never seen our air cleaner plug up so much on the combine. We had to clean it almost every day. That's unusual in corn for us anyway.
Yeah. Well, 2020 was a pretty unique year all around. What are you seeing with markets and so forth going into 2021? Are you changing anything up as far as which crops you're going to put in the ground?
No, we're staying pretty well with our rotation, and we're growing a little bit. We grow processing peas, and we're growing a few more acres of that, but it's negligible. So basically, it's all the same. Our beans, we grew beans for processing, and they did get frozen. We lost that crop to crop insurance, but that wasn't that's what happens when you. That's part of the deal,
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, well, and that's why you spread the risk out too and raise different things.
Well, we try to, yes. Our bean crop was a little below average, but not bad. But we suffered through quite a drought right from almost planting time right through the end of July. We did get some rain, but not a lot. But after that, it saved our corn crop anyway, the rain that we got at the end of July.
Yeah, we'll definitely take any rain we can get along the way in a dry season like that. Well, we didn't get ours until we were pretty much done with harvest. We got a little bit of moisture in the form of some snow and some drizzle, that kind of thing. But boy, it was sure welcome.
Yeah, any kind of moisture. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so what happens now? All the crop is out for you. Do you do fall tillage? Do you do fall fertilizer? What comes next for your farm?
No, most of our fertilizer goes on in the spring. Our tillage, we're no-till pretty well, except for our processing vegetables, which we sort of a minimum till. Right now, today, we have a machine. It's a row cleaner, but it's not like a zone till or a strip till machine. It's just row cleaners on a toolbar, and we clean where in our bean fields and our corn fields too, where we're going to plant next year.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting. There's lots of different ways to do it out there. And I think about where you're farming and where we farm here too, as you move further north, having a little bit of a darker strip out there with the residue out of the way certainly helps things warm up. No doubt about that. Talking with John up in Quebec, Canada. John, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
Very good. Thanks a lot. Nice to talk to you guys.
You bet. Good to talk to you as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Have resistant weeds invaded your cornfields? Tough 5-EC, manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, can help. When added to the post-emergence tank mix, Tough 5-EC synergizes the effectiveness of HPPD inhibitors on key broadleaf weeds. In fact, university field trials have shown 5 to 30% increased control of herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Now that's tough on weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. So today it is Farmer Friday. If you would like to call into the show, the number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com as well. Earlier in the show, we were in the Ag PhD mailbag, and we had this question about Zidua on wheat, and I just couldn't remember off the top of my head how late you could spray Zidua in wheat. Well, what it is the fourth tiller. So I got to make sure I try to remember that in the future. But anyway, up to the fourth tiller. So as for this using Zidua in the fall versus the spring, if it's fall seeded wheat, you're basically going to have to get it done now. And that question, by the way, that was the, I'm going to plant wheat now, and I'm going to basically interseed every few rows some soybeans next year. I am skeptical on how that's going to work, in part because there's nothing that I can think of, and I've been trying to rack my brain here for the last 20 minutes on, is there something that a guy could use post-emerge? If there is, I don't know what that is. Darren suggested, well, maybe Enlist One is labeled, because it's just 2,4-D. It's 2,4-D choline, so it's not like it's 2,4-D amine that is labeled in wheat. And no, Enlist One is not labeled, at least at this point, in wheat. Maybe it will be, I don't know. So that would have been a thought. So to finish up on that very first question that we had today, or one of the first questions we had today, I would just say, I don't care what you want to plant in terms of a soybean in there, because we just don't have any good post-emerge options anyway.
All right, let's get back to the phone lines here. We've got Aaron with us down in Iowa who emailed. Here you go, Brian. There's a copy of Aaron's test. Email test in. Aaron, this is going to be the new way to do Farmer Friday. Email in some soil tests and then call in to chat about it.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
I like it. So what? Here's what I did. So I saw you had a question and you had soil tests. So I didn't even look at your question. I just looked at the soil test first to see if I could figure out what your question was going to be. And I was like, wow, you know, we got a little bit of pH adjustment that we could probably do in parts out there that might be a little bit low. But that, some of that could be how dry we were this year, too. But I got looking and I thought base saturation in the 6 to 8 range of potassium, magnesium in the mostly in the 12 to 14% range. Calcium, a lot of that's pretty good, other than maybe where you need some lime. And phosphorus, yep, not too bad. I was like, wow, we got a lot of things going right. And then I looked at the micros and thought, I bet he's going to ask about micronutrients because we got a few of those that look like they could get built. And I looked at your question, and it looks like that's exactly what you wanted to talk about.
Well, you read my mind. I just wondered what would be the best approach. I know I've been putting zinc in furrow at planting. And then I have put some I put on boron with my dry, but like my sulfur, copper, and boron, I guess, are my biggest ones. What would be my best approach to start getting those numbers up?
Okay, so there are a lot of ways to do it. If what you've been doing on this zinc thing is throwing that, like you say, a little bit at planting time, that's basically just feeding your corn, and if you're raising a good corn crop followed by a good soybean crop, chances are in that 2-year cycle you're pulling out more zinc than what you've been applying, and that would indicate, I mean, that's in my opinion why your numbers are as low as they are. What we're usually shooting for in phosphorus, and the more we look at yield data versus soil test data, the more this gets proven out. We're kind of looking for in the 8-to-1 to 10-to-1 range phosphorus to zinc. So in other words, if let's say you start getting your phosphorus levels at 50, that means your zinc levels would probably need to be around 5 at a minimum. And we would say the cheapest way to do that, to really raise that soil test from on average, you're probably at 2.5. So 2.5 going to 5, just throw some zinc sulfate out there. So the challenge with this is I'm going to tell you, oh, zinc sulfate, easy. Copper sulfate, easy. So now we got two different products, and you're probably not going to be able to blend those two together. So what we've done a lot of times with the copper sulfate is we have used a dry flowable, put it in the sprayer, and actually gone and sprayed it out. With the zinc sulfate, you will do that with a dry spreader, and we'll just go spread that all by itself, and we just develop a variable rate map. We've actually been doing that here in the last few weeks. So that's how I would do it to fix both of those issues. And both copper sulfate and zinc sulfate are very inexpensive.
Okay.
Now, as far as the sulfur, lots of ways you can get that out there. I don't know what the cheapest source of sulfur is going to be for you. A lot of people, if they say, you know, I got most everything else taken care of, then I'll just use some ammonium sulfate. And so, like, even on our own farm, a lot of times we'll do 100 pounds of ammonium sulfate or 150 pounds of ammonium sulfate. So then we get the sulfur that we need out there, plus we're delivering some of our nitrogen. And then the rest of our nitrogen program will be either anhydrous urea or 28%.
Okay, on the AMS, is that something I can do in the fall, or should I wait till spring to do that?
You can do it in the fall. With that ammonium sulfate, it's in the nitrogen's in the ammonium form, so that's going to stick around in your soil. And, you know, when I look at your cation exchange capacities, you're as low as 8.4, so that's getting on the low side. And when I look at now, granted, you've got some as high as 20, but I'm just saying you don't want to go too early in the fall. But if you do it late in the fall, then I feel pretty comfortable.
Okay, and then boron.
Yep, boron. The cheapest way to do it is just to throw some dry boron out there. You've got fairly decent calcium levels. Now, I wouldn't get carried away, but if you're going to throw, let's say, 1 or maybe at the most 2 actual pounds of boron out there, you can go throw that out in a dry spreader. There are a lot of people who will use liquid, and we've done a lot of that too on our farm. The problem is if you're really trying to build a soil, then it's kind of expensive. It's going to be 4 or 5 times more expensive than what the dry is. So I might run a little bit of dry, and then if you want to, you could throw a little boron in a couple of different foliar applications or something like that. I wouldn't get super carried away. Boron a lot of times is not the yield limiting factor on most farms. You just want to make sure you have some out there. But yeah, I mean, when I'm looking at 0.3 to 0.5 parts per million on average here, you know, that's not a lot. And odds are, with all your other stuff being pretty good, that some boron at least could help you.
All right. Well, I appreciate you guys. I went this chunk of ground, I started grin sampling myself like 8 years ago, and my base percentage Ks were all like just right around one.
Oh.
So I've been following what you've told me to do, and I guess this was just my next step to try and round the corner on the yield.
Okay, so on the yield, how have the yields gone in the last 8 years as you've raised that base saturation K?
I always have a test plot right north of my house.
Yep.
And that'd be about my average ground. And I think I started out at about 204 for my average, and I'm always around 250 to 60 now.
Fantastic. Yep, that's exactly what we're looking for. And then we can certainly see, too, why you start looking at the micronutrients. But here's the other thing, and Darren said it already, but there is variability in this ground. And this is the big advantage. You talked about grid sampling. That's the big advantage of it, because you've got areas that might not need any more K or any more phosphorus, and then you have other areas that, you know what, you would benefit from those, and you'd certainly benefit from a lot of these micronutrients. So, I mean, the whole variable rate thing, as you start getting those fertility levels up, it can really pay for you, because you can save some dollars here and there and then take those dollars and put it into things like the micros like you're talking about.
Right.
All right.
Well, all right. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Aaron. Appreciate that.
Yeah, it's just great to see people building up soils and trying to get them more productive. Like you mentioned, they're 50 bushels more. Well, even at $3 corn, it's another $150 an acre that's coming in every year. And a lot of these levels that Aaron's building up to, it's going to be something that once you're there, now you're just putting on maintenance levels as you go. And wow, that's fantastic. And like you mentioned, the micros, I've got some fields too, and so does Brian, that we've built up those micronutrient levels. So once we get our copper up in the 2 parts per million, 3 parts per million, it's just going to stay there for a long time.
Oh,
we're
yeah,
not pulling
yeah.
that much out.
It's going to be there for a long time, but then you have to start being a little bit careful about the ratios. And that's where I come back to this whole grid soil sampling thing, or even zones, whatever it is, because we've actually got some spots now where we've overdone it. And I don't know if it was just operator error, we screwed something up, whatever happened, could have been equipment problem. But anyway, if you get the copper too high, well, that means that now I've got to get phosphorus higher and I've got to get zinc higher. So all those things just need to be looked at. Well, stay tuned. This is Ag PhD Radio.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burn down.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
The next big thing is here.
From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with ExtendFlex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop, and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. Thanks for joining us. Head back to the phone lines here. If you'd like to join the show, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. Get Brandon on with us right now in Northern Illinois. Brandon, thanks for calling in.
Hey, appreciate it, guys.
So what can we help you with?
Question. And on this particular ground, my landlord mandates non-GMO, which is fine. But I got some woolly cup, yellow nut sedge, and some giant foxtail, and just kind of curious on what your guys' thoughts would be to control them.
Sure. Now, I think where you're going with this whole thing is it would be easier if you were able to raise Roundup corn, and we would agree with you on that, all right? especially on the woolly cup grass. Even Liberty Link. Liberty and Roundup are just lights out on woolly cup grass. So in our area here, we used to deal with a lot of that woolly cup. I mean, that was one of my big things. When I was a young agronomist, I would be talking to farmers constantly about woolly cup grass, especially just as we got into northwest Iowa. And the best thing that came out for that was balance. So you could go with Balance Flex, and that'll be good. I'm not going to say it's going to be perfect, but it'll be good. So I'd use a fairly decent rate of Balance Flex. And then I would also use Dual. And the reason why I do the Dual, believe it or not, Dual actually has fairly decent activity on yellow nut sedge pre-emerge, but then it's also really good on the giant foxtail that you've got. So it'll help a little bit on the woolly cup. And so, I mean, I hate to have you stick that many dollars into a pre, but that's what I would do. I would go Balance Flex plus Dual. And then post-emerge on the yellow nut sedge side, there is Permit and there is Latic. So Latic is Basagran plus Atrazine. So Permit or the Basagran plus Atrazine, that's pretty good on yellow nut sedge if you have escapes. And then certainly if it's woolly cup grass or giant foxtail, any of the grasses, Accent Q would be the way to go. So that would be the program to take care of those weeds, and you'll get them.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds like a plan. Appreciate it.
You bet. Yep, thanks for the call. Yeah, Darren, I got to admit, it is kind of fun talking about conventional corn again when you have to use your memory and go back in time to before we had conventional corn or before we had Roundup corn. And I hate to say it, but we have very few brand new products in the last 25 years. I mean, brand new modes of action. A lot of combinations of the old modes of action, but not much new stuff.
All right. Let's head back to the phone lines. Got our friend Tony Wendler with us right now with Farm Shop MFG. Tony, how are you doing?
I am doing excellent today. With this November weather, how can you not be anything but perfect?
Well, that's for sure. Okay, talk to us about this then. You get this extra unexpected week of 70, even 80 degree weather in the upper Midwest. How does that impact the grain that we've already got in our bins?
We've had some more cooperative humidity, I'm going to say, around here than we've had in the past. I guess from the point of view of first of all, temperature, whatever you've got it at, if you've been cooling your grain down, I wouldn't be running this 70-degree air through there and warming it back up probably at this point, unless you needed to do some drying in it. One of the issues is during the day is the humidities are still dropping down pretty low, although – We're now seeing that humidities are more favorable for maintaining or adding moisture to beans through the night. And by mid-morning, they're starting to get low again. So you still got to manage and be thinking about what you're doing. If you don't care about 12 or 13% corn, 11% corn, turn your fans on and let them run. The in terms of trying to ventilate things and control, you got about 6-8 hours of maybe 10 hours of good air to be doing things, not over drying your grain, but maintaining it.
It is tricky, like you say, Tony. There are some good hours, and there are some hours you definitely don't want it running. So it's not something you can just flip a switch and let fans just run. Now, we've gotten a lot of calls from farmers who say, man, I harvested my beans at 8 or 9%, and I know I'm just taking a whooping on that. I'm really losing. Is it possible to install systems now to try to bring that moisture up?
Yes, if you went to our website, we've actually, you go in on the end zone, we've got what we call a grain bin door spear. We showed how you can make one. You got to drill about 1.25-inch hole in the bulkhead door, that interior door, and you can shove this thing in. So we've got a sensor in the bottom, and you can have another sensor then just running in under the roof and one on top. Let the control run it, and it will work really good. In fact, I was working with one of my neighbors here earlier this week on that very topic to go through and just, he's got 33,000 bushels of 9.5% beans. And we were talking about that, you know, that's $15,000, more than 15, if we can get that moisture back in his grain. And it, you can. In fact, I was looking at mine that I just kind of overshot mine a little bit. I'm just a hair over 13, so I need to kind of back it down a little bit and get it to target.
Yeah, it's so important to take a look at this on your farm and to keep an eye on the bins, of course. But when you've got dry grain, you've got this easy opportunity to add value back to your farm. And I know we always look at it on our farm of, oh, no, we got to get the combine out there quick. And you just can't always get it perfect. But systems like this allow you to do that. And, of course, Tony's mentioning the system that he works with. You can go to farmshopmfg.com and find out more information there. But, Tony, you keep giving us hope. You keep giving us hope. We have trouble with dry grain or grain that's out of condition, that we still can do something about it. Thanks for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Oh, sure. Quick. Go ahead.
What's your thoughts? One of the things when people talk to me, they talk about how to approach temperature when we're trying to put the moisture back in. And I've tried to call some experts. Nobody calls me back. My question is, if your grain freezes or you operate down in the freezing zone, can you still get the moisture to go into stored grain? I've been telling people shut your fans off at 33 degrees.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay. I've got no science to back it up. I'm just thinking when water's frozen, it's not going to move around.
Totally agree with you. Brian's nodding his head too. We don't want to get quite that cold, but really, as long as you're below 40, you're in a good spot for keeping the bugs out. So that's been our target.
Yeah. I'm just talking from the point of view of the fan shut off. I just say when the air drops below 33, let the end zone shut the fans off.
Yep, totally agree, Tony. Great point. Yeah, don't completely freeze the grain. Talking with Tony Wendler with Farm Shop MFG. Thanks again, Tony. Really appreciate it. Get this one from Brad in Central Iowa, and he said, I pulled my 1 acre to 1.5 acre grids on a few fields, and I put together my map, and I'll pass you his map here, Brian, because it's awesome. It's a phosphorus to zinc map. And he said, what I thought was interesting is, just like you guys, I found when I get my phosphorus to zinc ratio closer to 10 to 1, I get higher yields. So my question, since our yields were disappointing this year, 40 to 70 bushels less than last year due to the derecho and the dry August, what are your thoughts about going back to last year, pulling yield data in the same sample points and taking a look at this? Is it
definitely
too much of a stretch to get additional insight, or should
no.
I just use
I'd do it
soil
for
tests and yield data within the same year?
I'd do it for any year that I have soil test data and yield points.
Well, he has this year's soil tests, last
oh,
year's yield data.
Now
he's
I
wondering,
what you're saying.
Since his yields are so far off,
no.
he didn't take out a ton of fertilizer.
Well, You could, but it's not going to be super accurate. This is accurate because now you know exactly what the yield was. You know exactly what the soil test is. You don't know necessarily what came out of your soil's organic matter. You don't know for sure what microbial activity was. So you could try, and maybe that would lead you to something. But no, I would only do it when I have soil test data and yield data in the same fall. But yeah, this is something we've been talking about for the last couple of years now. For most people, they do have soil test grid point data. And based on a GPS location, and then from that GPS location, you can look at, well, what was my yield nearest to that? And you can start charting these things out. It has given us tremendous insight on our farm, and I know it could do the same for you. So now you don't have to trust somebody else for fertilizer recommendations. The data will literally tell you. We'll be right back.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
When it comes to leading herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Cheetah, a high-quality glufosinate herbicide made right here in the USA. Now for use on a wide variety of crops with glufosinate-resistant traits, including Enlist crops. Its novel mode of action will manage existing or emerging herbicide resistance and provide fast, effective results. This means you can focus more on profitability and less on weeds. Nufarm and Cheetah Herbicide, here to help.
It's about time. Applied at planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind in-furrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. If you'd like to give us a call, again, that number is 844-442-4743, or send us an email, radio@agphd.com.
All right, got a question from Craig in northern Wisconsin. He said, the only corn that can grow up where I'm at is the lowest heat unit possible corn we can find. We did some 76-day last year. We did a little bit of 82-day also, which my question is, what could I expect if I have good soils for yield? I know that my soils could actually hold 400 pounds of nitrogen, but I've been told by seed dealers that I can't get more than 150 bushel corn in this area with the short corn. So I'm wondering, what do I shoot for this year? How much nitrogen can I put on?
Okay, so the good news is you have heavy soil. All right. I think we've established that. That's why he's saying he could technically put on 400 pounds. Would I put on 400 pounds? Not a chance in the world. Now, if you want to do it on, you know, one little strip for 1 acre, you go ahead. But what I would look at is a soil test, and I'd see how am I doing on everything else. Because here's the whole thing. Just because you have to raise 76 to 82 day corn does not mean you have to suffer dramatic yield loss. So you can have 200 bushel corn there. Now, I'm not saying that everybody in your area instantly is going to raise 200 bushel corn, but is it possible with the genetics? Absolutely, and then some. So the reason why I'm talking about the soil test is it's our way of trying to help you figure out what else do you actually need, because just like he brought up, everybody is going to talk about nitrogen, and the fertilizer dealer is going to talk about nitrogen, and that's great. Don't get me wrong. But there are a lot of other things that could actually be holding that yield back where it is limited to 150, and we've got the potential. And I'm not talking about world record kind of stuff. I'm talking about the potential just to go from 150 to 200. There are a lot of people that have been able to raise really good corn with that early day stuff. I know Darren works with a lot of farmers who, and Darren looks at genetics even for 76 to 82. Well, let me just ask you this real quick, Darren. Does 76 day corn have the yield potential for, I wouldn't just say average, but for somebody who is going to manage their field well, does it have the potential to yield 200 bushel corn?
You could maybe get 200.
Yes.
You'd need some population, though. A lot of those 76-day corns don't have a lot of flex to the ears, meaning they're the same size ear whether you plant 20,000 or 30,000. So why not plant 30,000 and fertilize and go for some more yield? Now, I would say this. If you could plant, you could plant 80 or 82-day corn, you've got more yield potential there than you do with the 76-day corns.
Sure.
At this extremely early maturity group, we definitely see yield bounce up every 5 days or so.
Yes.
So if you can plant 85-day corn, that'd be even better yet, but it doesn't sound like you can. So I would not take the risk. There's plenty of yield potential there in the maturities that are right for your area. Don't take the risk because you get an early frost and you lose stuff. You don't want to have 40% moisture and 40-pound test weight. So I like planting early corns as a majority of your program. Maybe take a flyer on a small amount of acres with a little bit longer.
Yep. And again, Craig, if you've got some soil tests, we'd be more than happy to look at those and tell you what else we can see with your soil. But here's one other thing, just as an assumption. When we start talking about that far north, he's in northern Wisconsin, and he says his soil could technically hold 400 pounds of nitrogen. That tells me we have really heavy soil. We may have a drainage issue. And if we have a drainage issue, that's going to be one of our first things to increasing your yield potential is let's fix the drainage issue. But again, I don't know that. It's just simply a guess because I haven't looked at any soil tests or anything like that. So anyway, Craig, we do think you have more potential than 150. Are you going to raise 400 bushel corn this next year, though? Now maybe you will, but I think being realistic, we're going to say, no, you may have that potential to get to 200, definitely 180, but 400 pounds of nitrogen, that would be overdoing it. All right, let's go to the phone lines. We've got Dell calling in from Michigan. Dell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you. My question is, and you kind of talked about it, is genetics.
Yep.
In seed, soybean seed and corn seed, can the scientists tell if it's been genetically modified? And what's the difference if it's in a hybrid? And then what's the difference if it's open pollinated? Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so first of all, in terms of his question about can the scientists tell if it's genetically modified, so GMO corn, or as we would often call it, biotech corn. Sure.
Yeah, or soybeans too. They definitely can do that. They can do leaf, even just having a leaf of the plant or a sliver off the seed. One of the things that's been kind of cool, and we had this at our field day, Monsanto at the time brought one of their seed chipping machines to demonstrate how they were able to take just a tiny little chip off a seed, not even hurt the germination on the seed, so they could still use it, but they could do a complete genetic makeup of that seed. And it was amazing. It was game-changing technology in genetics work and seed breeding to be able to do that on such a large scale and get so many samples through. They could really speed up the process. So for sure, they definitely can do that. They definitely can move things along that way and test for different traits.
Okay, and then as far as this hybrid corn versus open pollinated corn, every once in a while at the Ag PhD field day, we'll have some open pollinated corn. And sometimes it actually yields fairly well. But the advantage to the hybrid corn, they just find, it would be kind of like if you have dealt with livestock at all in your life. The more you do the crossbreeding, the better tolerance you have, the better tolerance the animals then will have for diseases and just the better chance they have for overall good health. With hybrid corn, it has been proven out over time to yield significantly more than open pollinated corn. And then what they'll do on the breeding end of things, that's where they start combining, well, this one versus this one with that one and, you know, going on down the road so they can end up with all of the traits that we as farmers are looking for, like good roots, good stalk, good yield, better disease tolerance, better insect tolerance, you know, some of those kinds of things. And we don't see that so much with the open pollinated corn.
All right, thanks for the question, Dell. Get another one here. This one comes in from Kyle, and he said, we've got cockleburrs in our confection sunflower fields, and I'm wondering what's the best way to address a large seeded broadleaf like that?
Hand pulling them. Or you could go out there with the old bean rider like we used to have and squirt the cockleburrs with a little bit of Roundup. Otherwise, no, there's unfortunately nothing that you're going to spray post-emerge in sunflowers, or for that matter, even pre-emerge, that's going to have great activity on those cockleburrs. In sunflowers, we just have so few weed control options, it makes me sad.
It's why the Clearfield options, the Express Sun options are awesome and very well received, because at least there's something that you can spray post-emerge without hurting the sunflowers.
Yes. So there, would Beyond take those sunflowers out?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Be awesome.
Yes, yep, that would be fine. Would Express take them out? Well, it'd have some activity on them. I don't know if it's going to be perfect. But Beyond and Clearfield sunflowers, that would be the way to go when you're talking cockleburrs in sunflowers. Otherwise, yeah, it's hand pulling them, or don't plant sunflowers. The other thing I would say is cockleburr seed lives about 7 years in the soil. So if you can keep that field weed free for 7 years, then hopefully the problem goes away and now you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, we've had that happen on our farm. We've wiped out the cockleburrs that we used to have, just terrible. And
yeah,
I just haven't seen him for a long time.
Yep.
Hey, thanks for the question, Kyle. I got one here from Jimmy in Iowa. He said, I really enjoyed learning from your 2020 soils webinar. Today, I'm working on a strip-till fertilizer order for my 2021 soybean crop.
Okay.
Wondering if I need to add magnesium to the blend. My base saturation is between 9 and 12%. My soil CEC is around 13. Well, also wondering, would K-Mag be a good choice if I needed the magnesium and didn't need any more calcium? And he said, one comment, your fertilizer calculator doesn't appear to make any specific soil recommendations for magnesium other than to give us a base saturation target.
Okay. So on base saturation, yeah, he's got, let's see, it looks like as low as 9.5. Oh, no, he's got some clear down to 8.5. So at that point, would we add a little bit of magnesium? Yeah, I might consider that. And especially if it's K-Mag, you need a little bit of potassium. You could use a little bit of magnesium. I wouldn't get real carried away, but I mean, it certainly wouldn't hurt if you got just a little bit of magnesium out there.
All right, thanks for the question. Thanks for coming to our for checking out our soils clinic last year, too. That's a really good way to get all the information at one time. But of course, if you're interested in learning more about how to read a soil test, we've got all kinds of content available for free online on our YouTube channel. You can check out our website at agphd.com as well. Thank you, Jimmy. Really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.